I got to get out of here. John Carley and Sherry Alton show's coming up next. God bless you in these crazy times.
You too,
I hope they use this in the intro to their show today.
Thanks for handing it off to the A-team, Dory. There you go. All righty. He hits the gong. By the way, let's give him a different instrument to hit tomorrow, Andrew, would you?
Sure. I've got a fresh new sound effects library I'm digging through. I think I have some good sounds for that.
Now look at you then. How about you, Brian? Bring the show up. Oh, here she comes now.
Hey.
Hey. Yeah.
Uh-oh. It's going to be one of those days.
Dougie's electric bike I bought for him just arrived today, so we're all excited. We're going to go riding around, and he's like, I got to lose weight. I don't know how an electric bike is going to help him lose weight, but I guess it's just it's one better than riding around on that side-by-side he's got. So,
yeah, that anyway, can be dangerous.
What's that? What can be dangerous?
Those electric bikes. Simon Cowell broke his back on one and actually got
confused. Sherry. Okay.
Just got to be careful, that's all.
Fine.
Just be careful.
Got it. All right. Okay, let's get started. King County Sheriff's Office. We get an update on the fact that the deputy's firing over the COVID mandate. You know, this is you had to be vaccinated or they would fire you. And so our new sheriff is in there talking about this. Cairo 7 is talking about the fact that they've got a shortage problem. You don't have enough people in there working. So what are you going to do about it? Well, I have to stall for 4, 3, 2. I don't like this part of the system that I can't advance that your silly song. But okay.
The vaccine mandate is we had a large number of vacancies before this played in. And then this just added on top. But my goal as the sheriff of the King County Sheriff's Office is to make the sheriff's office a premier law enforcement agency where we can fill these vacancies and we will have a line of people who want to come work for the sheriff's office. And
KCSO has been experiencing severe staffing shortages as they struggle to hire and retain deputies.
It is a whole number of issues that have kind of come together at the same time. And I, one thing that worries me, keeps me up at night, is if our numbers continue to increase in terms of our commission vacancies, we are at risk of not being able to provide basic public service.
Just recently, King County Councilmember Reagan Dunn pushed for an end of firing unvaccinated deputies because of an uptick in violence and staffing shortages.
I just wanted to say that, I've disagreed with the policy of a vaccine mandate in the sheriff's office from the beginning because of the substantial loss of personnel, whether they were forced into retirement or by the thing itself or the fear of disclosing information or were not granted an exemption. And I see there, it looks like there's around 100, looks like maybe 112 deputy vacancies and a substantial.
Mm-hmm. So the question is, do we still continue to keep this thing in place? And Reagan Dunn wants to look at those numbers. I had seen from an epidemiologist from Yale, she said that she does not believe that we'll be getting regular vaccines from COVID. She says it's different from a flu vaccine. I couldn't get into the whole technical medical reason as to why, but she's saying she does not think there'll be annual vaccines that need to go given every single year because of COVID. But so what will he do here? I see some cities have decided they're starting to look at whether or not to keep these mandates in place, these vaccine mandates for these city employees, for these government employees. Some of them are starting to peel away or letting it go. So whether or not they keep that in place in Seattle or King County to have people work. Reagan Dunn's trying to get those numbers back up again. Seattle City Councilmember Sarah Nelson explains why she's interested in offering a hiring incentive. This is to get the SPD numbers up. I just wrote to one of my cop buddies to see how many more people have quit because we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, Sherry, that what people do is cops are burning up their remaining burning up their remaining like vacation days and sick days And then after they use them all up, then they will quit. So how to get more cops on the street?
On the campaign trail and since taking office, I've heard the same thing over and over and over again. Residents don't feel safe. 911 call response times are through the roof and businesses are closing because of crime. So the plain fact is that we can't achieve an equitable recovery unless we improve public safety. And that should be our only job.
Okay. Don't forget, all cops are bastards and they're all a bunch of racists. But apparently we need them. I didn't quite understand why we would need them back again, because I thought they create more crime.
And
but
he said that when an officer in SPD applies for a lateral position in a neighboring jurisdiction, they have to get the sign off. Recommendations from fellow officers. And he told me he had filled out 3 in just 1 week. And I think those officers were going to, if my memory is correct, Sammamish, Everett, and Snohomish, I believe. Puyallup, Sammamish, and Everett. And those jurisdictions and every other jurisdiction in our region use hiring incentives to recruit officers. So to level the playing field to compete for a limited pool of applicants, Seattle must do the same and implement a similar program.
Mean streets of Sammamish.
Maybe a little bit of a less stressful gig. What they're proposing here is a resolution that will increase the budget for advertising by about $350,000. And what Lisa Herbold wants to do is she wants them to use the $650,000 that they've got to pay for relocation benefits for the new hires. And also, and this is a big one and an important one, hire a recruiter, somebody that actually does that for a living, to try to get the, you know, the appropriate message out there, the PR campaign, whatever they have to do.
Well, you know, you get Teresa Mosqueda. She's arguing that they shouldn't be giving SPD more help than any other agencies that are out there. They're also getting cuts.
The Seattle Police Department's budget got $355.5 million in last year's budget. This included funding for 125 new hires. This also made sure that there was no cuts to the current SPD staffing plan, that there was no cuts to SPD officers in the proposed budget, and funded an expansion of the community service office. I still think that that should be done using existing resources. I do not support making an effort to dip into the reserves that are being made possible from this proviso and lift it for a blank check. This is not the time for us to be looking at giving over money to SPD to use in this critical juncture where we are asking other departments to put a hold on current spending and potentially think about reductions next year.
Well, you really can't be doing much if you don't have anybody enforcing the laws, right? You can have all the other programs you want, but the first step is somebody out there keeping the bad guys off the street and keeping the rest of us safe. Starts there, and then you have the other stuff that goes with it. To me, the basic function of the government was supposed to be, you know, filling the potholes, right? And then picking up the garbage, doing that sort of stuff, and then you have the police out there. So then you get the fire. Those are some of your basics. That the big budget, the big part of the budget for the Seattle Police, it's pretty big. It's like $600,000+. Don't forget Mosqueda and others who wanted to cut that thing in half. Oh, or get rid of it entirely and get rid of police. So now they're saying, well, hold on a second. You know, what about other departments? Don't they deserve some money as well? So this is Lisa Herbold. She's also in there. She doesn't want any new money spent
on this. This is not new money for SPD. This is money from salary savings associated with the 125 officer spending plan. This is dollars that they cannot, already allocated to SPD, that they cannot spend. So I just heard you say something that made it sound like we're giving over new money to SPD. That is not the case.
That's city council still working from home. They're not back in the building again. They're still doing their Zoom calls and stuff. Listen, your city has got a crime problem, and the last time I checked, it's police are the ones that handle those things. So if you don't have enough cops and you don't have any money to attract them, then you'll continue to have crime problems. Then people move out of the city. People don't feel safe in the city. It's one of the basic services that you're supposed to offer as a city, which is police. If you want to live in a place with absolutely no police, you could have one city with no police, and you have another city with police, and you find out how many people would want to live in the city without any police. So it's an ongoing battle. And they're starting to really realize what happens when you don't fund the police or you don't respect the police, and they can go somewhere else like Sammamish or Fife or Federal Way, or they go to Edmonds or some other place where they're paid and they're appreciated.
Well, one of the things that Teresa Mosqueda pushed back on was she doesn't believe that some of these hiring incentives are actually effective. She doesn't think that that's that she thinks that there's research out there to suggest that these things don't really help that much. Well, how else are you going to attract people? I mean, if you've got a city that's already in a deficit in terms of police officers, you have to have a carrot, right? You have to be able to have people be incentivized to come and work there if the conditions already have been advertised that it's not the easiest place in the world to work. So mm-hmm. How else are you going to do it if you don't do it with money?
That's it. You go somewhere else, right? It's a free market. You want to go somewhere else, somebody else pays you more for it. You got to step up, you know, and that's what you end up doing. It's like for anything, I mean, an athlete has a chance to go to this team or go to that team. I'm going to go to the team that pays me more money. So he goes somewhere else. The same thing with these guys. And they realize at this point, why do I want to work at Seattle? Well, if it's a horrible place to work because the city council is horrible and they hamstring you with a whole bunch of rules and bizarre regulations, and they think you're a racist to begin with and they think you're a horrible person. And then you're like, okay, with all that said, you pay me an extra $100,000 a year, I'll still come in there and I'll work there. But there's a certain number that people are willing to, you know, do the service for, and they haven't reached the number in order to get the people to come, and this is what you have, and, you know, where's our murder rate, crime rate, shoplifting, carjacking, all of that stuff. And most of the people, when you ask them in the city of Seattle, what do you think is the big problem, what do you want to see worked on, they'll talk about, you know, we want the streets to be safe. And if the streets aren't safe, you can't function as a society. I was reading about the beginning of the first sort of civilization, the first part of government. There used to be all these little tribes, like 100 people in one little spot and other people. This would go way, 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 way back. And you'd have little tribes, little groups of people are all together, and they would be growing some crops or something and then storing some crops. And then you had these marauding bands of robbers that would come through, steal everything, rape and burn and kill and everything else. Then they'd go to the next little tribe, the next little tribe. And what was happening was people were then, the little tribes would say, you know what, let's not store anything. Let's not save anything because, you know, probably in a couple of months, another band of marauder robbers will come through and steal everything. So then they didn't have anything for them to steal other than might have been already in the field. So one group of robbers said, you know, I'll tell you what, we'll stay here, okay, and protect you from the next group of marauding bandits that are coming through. We will fight them for you and protect everything. And all you have to do is feed us and, you know, give us a home. And we'll stay. And that was really the beginning of this sort of idea of a state or a civilization with the idea of protection. It was the beginning of it. Because then the little civilization, 125 people, whatever the tribe was, they had protection from others. So then they were able to store grain. So they had stuff set aside. And then they could begin to trade. But it really began with the first, you know, sort of fabric. The first piece of fabric was, we need protection in order for us to function as a society. And it was the first group of marauders that had come through and said, we'll stay. You just pay us and we'll protect you. And if you think about it, you peel a whole bunch of other stuff away, all these other programs and everything else, the diversity, equity, and all that inclusion crap. You just simply say, are the people able to function? Can you have stuff on your shelf that you want to sell to somebody without somebody coming in and stealing it from you? And can you call the police that would grab the person that stole it from you? And can that person be put in a cage and kept away from the rest of us so that the rest of us can all function?
And can the police get there in an appropriate amount of time to be able to apprehend that person? And I know this happened in Baltimore. Once you get a very bad PR problem about crime, you really have a hard time recovering from that. Once you get a bad rap as a city, as a place that's unsafe, everything deteriorates. Nobody wants to visit. Nobody wants to live there. And everybody just kind of, I don't know. Did you hear about that? I mean, it is a very, very tough thing to overcome once that starts to happen.
Right. And you know what? You can see it in certain cities where you don't go there at night. Remember that? Where you just don't want to go in. It's about Central Park all the time. Well, you don't want to be caught in Central Park at night. And then there were bad areas. Well, don't be up on 125th Street or don't be at 98th. And I remember, you know, the gentrification would happen. They would move up from 87th. This is when I was in New York. 87th on the west side. Then 94th got good. And then 96th. And then it got better and better. And it kept pushing further and further and further. But there were certain areas. Oh, my God. You do not want to go there at night. Right. And though you just knew the spots, don't go there, don't go here. Well, all of a sudden, as that stuff, the don't go areas become worse and worse or bigger and bigger and bigger and expand out, then it's like, well, you don't even want to go to that entire section. You don't even want to go to that city. You don't even want to be there at night. You'll hear from a lot of people that live outside of Seattle, like, we don't go in anymore. We used to go to the Triple Door. We used to go to Wild Ginger and have dinner. But we've had a horrible experience. So we don't bother going down Third. We don't bother going here. You don't go there. So then people peel away. They vote with their feet and they vote with their dollars and they go somewhere else. So this is what we have. And I've been trying to do research on other cities that tipped that way. How do you tip back the other way? And the best example I could see is from Dinkins, Mayor Dinkins in New York, and then Rudy Giuliani came in, and then what happened with the crime rate and the investment they made into Times Square and everything else like that. Now people, oh, that wasn't fair. You know, they're arresting people. But the murder rates dropped, the crime dropped, everything else dropped when Rudy became America's mayor. And then later on, it turned into Crazy Rudy with the hair dye running down the side of his face.
Right. And unfortunately, it's tipping back in the other direction now, New York City. So let's hope that that can be righted as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's see. Passengers had no idea how to fly the plane. Oh, great story.
Yeah, that is a great story.
Yeah, the guy's on a plane. Nobody has even bothered to ask about the pilot. All anybody's talking about is this poor guy. Do we even know where the pilot is at this point that was incoherent or incapable of flying? Has anybody checked on the pilot recently?
Everything that I've read has said the condition of the pilot is unknown, but there may be an update. I'll check into it. I'm on it. Okay.
All right. Oh, wow. Look at this. I'm Hannah. And how about you, Andrew, with the sound effects? How's that going?
I'm filtering through them right now. I'll have something new by tomorrow.
All right, Jacob, what are you doing? All hands on deck.
I've just been, I'll oversee everybody
else.
You obviously
are doing nothing.
Yes.
There we go, Keel Mortgage. Everybody at Keel Mortgage, can't wait to hear from you. You want to talk about refinancing that house of yours, getting some of that equity out of it? Why not get in touch with the good people at Keel Mortgage. Keel Mortgage, 1-888-778-KIEL. Keel Mortgage. All right, I love these stories because do we have the sound of the guys working the air traffic control? Imagine the most amazing people. I'd love to know what it is about their brains, how it works. They're the most calm people, aren't they? They're just amazing. There's one guy in New York that they call a Mean Joe or something like that. Rye was telling me about him. That nobody likes to talk to him because he's so short and he doesn't do well with, you know, pilots that don't know what they're doing. You know, go around. But most of these guys are amazing. And for this particular passenger who suddenly goes from passenger to pilot, it's the air traffic control that talks him in. Let's see. I don't want to oversell it. I didn't hear it ahead of time, Jacob. Is this any good?
Yeah, well, just start it. The beginning's the best, and it kind of tapers off.
All right, here we go. So he's the pilot, I think, is unconscious. So this guy gets on the radio.
Traffic, Air 333, Lima Delta.
Airvan 333, Lima Delta, Fort Pierce Tower.
I've got a serious situation here about pilot.
I have no idea how to fly the airplane, but I'm in training at 9100. Number 333, Lima Delta, Roger. What's your position?
I have no idea. I see the coast of Florida in front of me, and I have no idea.
First of all, let's give credit to a bunch of people here. The guy who has no idea how to fly also seems fairly calm, doesn't he?
He's completely calm. I listened to the entire thing. He is incredibly calm. He never gets upset. They can't find him for a little while, for like 4 or 5 minutes. They don't know where he is, and they're trying to figure that out. And he's not panicking. He's not demanding. He's not anything. He just stays with them, listens to what they say. It's a great story because the guy that they got to help him, the air traffic controller that they got to come in to help him, was on his break, and he was reading a book. And this guy, come to find out, is a flight instructor in his spare time.
Perfect.
And yeah, and he printed out a picture of the cockpit that the guy was in so he would know what to tell him to do and direct him accordingly. This I mean, great. Imagine the quick thinking of that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, here we go.
Number 333 Lima Delta, do you know how to operate the transponder? Can you squawk 7700?
I know how to do that. I know, but okay, that's me. I'm not in the plane. Hang on.
Yeah, repeat that frequency to swap.
Number 333 Lima Delta, Fable, input 7700 into your transponder.
Here.
So what he's doing is he's asking him, so there's a little device, there's a, you either turn it, but it's like an old De Havilland Beaver, or this one, you just, it's a little box there on the right-hand side, and you just type that number in on the transponder, so then they can find you, so they know where you are, and now he's able to see him.
November 3, Lima Delta, can you say again what the situation is?
Pilot, is it clear?
And number 3, Lima Delta, that came in a little broken. What was the situation with the pilot?
He is incoherent. He is out.
Number 3, Lima Delta, Roger. Try to hold the wings level and see if you can start descending for me. Push forward on the controls and descend at a very slow rate.
Yeah, I'm descending right now at 560 feet a minute, passing 8640.
Number 33, Lima Delta, Roger, and continue the descent and try to level off at 5,000 feet.
And for what heading do I need to be at? Give me a compass heading because I have no controls.
You know, if this guy ever does this again, try to get a little closer to the mic. I mean, let's criticize the guy. Try to keep the wings level. Can you get a little closer to the mic in case anyone wants to play this on their radio show?
Remember, Three Lima Delta, maintain wings level and just try to follow the coast, either north or southbound. We're trying to locate you.
Can I say I feel like he knows too much to say that he doesn't know anything about flying a plane? There's like a few questions they ask him that he knows the answer to that I feel like I wouldn't.
Oh, yeah, kind of Gilding the Lily there.
Sure.
Like, I've got no idea what I'm doing.
Wink, wink. Yeah, you can't see. You can't see what he's...
Yeah, I've never been in an airplane. How do you spell it? Okay.
Yeah, and even in the beginning, like, didn't he use the lingo? Like, in the very beginning, like, you know, Alpha Delta, you know, Bing Bong, whatever. I mean, didn't he know that? I mean, if it was anybody else, help, help, help.
Oh, yeah,
you know.
Okay, so okay, I'm going to cut his part of it out of it. You be the pilot, all right? Hold on a second.
Wait, then I'm comatose if I'm the pilot.
No. Yeah. All right, you be comatose. I'll be the guy talking. Okay.
Triple three,
that's him knowing the Bing Bong stuff. Okay, so ready? You're going to... The guy's going to talk to you, Sherry. You'd be you, right?
Okay.
Airman
right.
333, okay. Lima Delta, Fort Pierce Tower.
What is Lima Delta? Is that like a sorority? I don't know what that means. Tell me something else. Please, please, please. I don't know what I'm looking at. There's no steering wheel. There's no brake. There's
and
nothing.
00?
00 what?
Stand by with me,
I didn't even understand what you're saying.
What frequency? 333, Lima Delta.
First of all, you get me more panic, Sherry.
I am panicked. I don't know what to
do.
No,
girly, be screaming like a girl.
Then I'll have to scream. Okay, go ahead. All right, go. You be. Okay.
Aircraft down. You can proceed on 10.
Palm Beach Town Airport 4. It's a fire station with Op 44 and one blue light. Like, proceed out to the runway.
Yep, proceed on 10. American 1845, you can make the left turn there, hold short of 10 left. It's going to be a couple minutes. You just wait for a couple passengers land that plane.
We'll hold short of 10 left, American 1845.
Man, they did a great job.
Oh, he's already landed? I've been screaming. I missed the whole story.
That's correct.
How the hell you are.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, no, great job.
No flying experience.
We're going to call BS on that. Yeah. Get the cat out on that one. No flying experience. Yeah, he knew the Delta Bing.
Big bell that time.
Do you have a cow now? he knew too many Bing Bong things, right? And I always make fun of Rye because I used to say to him, oh, the Cessna, that's the Cessna 172, the thing they call that thing the Land-O-Matic. He's like, Dad, it's not that easy. I said, yeah, the Land-O-Matic. Will you find the Land-O-Matic? Because I just see you fly it. So
I wonder what Rye would think if he heard this, if he would think the guy had a little too much, you know, he was a little too much in the know.
He would be right in there with you being highly skeptical of it. I used to, the De Havilland Beaver used to fly with EV Magazine. We would get up to whatever, 3,000 or 4,000 feet, and then the pilot would then go, okay, you have it. Just keep it on that heading for the next 45 minutes. And then I would just fly it. It was great.
Wait, fly it like how? Like, would you touch anything? Does that just mean it?
No, just hold on to the thing and just look straight ahead. And one day, Daryl's in the back, and the pilot's sitting in the back reading, and I'm flying the thing, and all of a sudden, it just stops. The propeller stops, which isn't good. And Daryl starts yelling, like, do something! Do something! And Denny says, you need to switch over the to the other tank. You're out of gas. And Daryl's in the back, come on, Denny, seriously, do something! And it's just that kind of quiet sort of, we're just sort of gliding. And you had to switch over to the other tank, which is in the other pontoon or whatever. And then you had to prime it to get the thing. And, that point was terrifying. Yeah, we used to fly it all the time. Just take it up and just keep it going. And then when we get down to a certain place, Denny would then take it over and then land it for us. It was fun. And I sold it at an auction one time, flying the plane and then fly the plane. This kid was 4 years old or 5 years old. Let him take the seat. We swung the yoke over, and then he goes, okay, we're going to go to the right. Just going to turn a little to the right. And the kid just took the yoke and just turned it hard to the right. The whole plane goes, flips right. The left wing goes way up in the air. All the crap in the plane flies over. And we're like, okay, new rule. Five-year-olds, not allowed to fly.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Whose brilliant idea was that?
It was mine. I wanted to give the child an experience.
Okay.
All right.
That worked out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Look at you not enjoying the story. You immediately look, you're sniffing out the fake stuff. You and your cat, Sherry. Here we go. The John Curley, Sherry Elicker Show. Starring Sherry Elicker and Bobby Benson. Robbie Benson.
Robbie Benson. Nice, and there's Barbie Benton or Bobby Benton.
I got caught up in that thing this morning. I'm looking, and it was one of these things now. You would be amazed at what they look like now. It was Anne Margaret. Like, look at it. Yeah, and then you click.
You clicked on that, and then you have to go through 40 pictures. It says Jacqueline Smith is almost 100. Look at what she looks like now. And I'm thinking, is she really almost 100?
I know. And then you keep clicking. And I keep thinking, I'm probably going to, I'm infecting my phone. I keep clicking. And I'm like, why do I care what she looks like? And I can't stop myself. Ugh.
Yeah, I've done that. Don't worry.
Yeah.
Or kids. Oh, really? Like the kids, you'll see the celebrities' kids, like, you won't believe what they look like, 10 years ago or something like that. And you just go through them all. Yeah. Don't worry. It happens.
Okay. I didn't know this. I didn't realize, but Hollywood screenwriters reveal that TV characters, they never say the word goodbye.
Why do actors in movies and television not say goodbye when they end a phone call?
In TV, we call lines like that shoe leather. Shoe leather might make a scene feel more realistic, but it doesn't necessarily make the scene more entertaining. Now, in TV, we also have running times, so we have to turn in a cut to the network, let's say 22 minutes. They won't accept 22 minutes and 30 seconds. Knowing this, we always shoot long, maybe 25 minutes, knowing that not every scene is going to be great. We want to have the liberty to trim and pace up a bit, but we don't know where. The first 2 or 3 minutes are easy to cut, but that last minute is hard. And you're like, well.
This is how we produce the show every day, too. We really just dial it right down every minute. Jacob's like, you think you can find another 20 seconds?
If I cut the guy saying goodbye, maybe I get to keep my favorite joke. Right? Eventually you get to the point where you're not even writing goodbye into the script, knowing from experience that you're just going to cut it later. Now, here's the thing. If you really like hearing people say goodbye when they end a phone call, you can go to almost any coffee shop and eavesdrop. 9 times out of 10, a person will end a phone call by saying goodbye, and you're going to be in heaven.
Okay, and he's a comedy writer?
Yeah, he's trying really hard, isn't he?
Yeah.
So I could have, you know what I could have done? Hold on a second. Let's see. Okay. How long is this thing? This was
54 seconds.
We could have cut that whole thing, Jacob, and saved ourselves 54 seconds. They don't say goodbye on TV shows and movies. I had never noticed that. And
I didn't either.
I'd rather look at pictures of Anne Margaret with a really bad facelift.
I asked a friend of mine about this. I was like, I saw this article about not saying goodbye, and she's like, yeah, that's a thing. And I said, she said, yeah, it's a pet peeve of mine. That's a thing. Is it? I never even noticed. It didn't occur to me that they don't say goodbye. They just hang up the phone, or they don't even show them really. I don't know. It doesn't seem like it's that big of a deal, but apparently people have noticed and it bothers them.
I think the better question and the better sort of establishing of the character is when they answer the phone. I remember when I was in sales, sell medical supplies and stuff. I thought, I'm going to be the guy that answers the phone, not when customers are calling, but like other people. I like when the phone rings, yeah, talk to me. Mm-hmm. You know, that kind of, like, the guy starts right out with, Curly here, or just something. I wanted a kind of like a catchphrase or sort of a way to answer the phone. Yeah, my father used to go, hello. That was my dad. Hello. I kind of like that, but that was his. So I always try to come up, talk to me. Yeah, bing, bing, talk to me.
That is kind of cooler than hello.
Yeah. Do ring, ring. I'll try a couple different ones.
Okay. All right. Ring, ring. Ring, ring. Ring, ring.
I saw it was you. I was just letting it go to voicemail.
Okay. Come on.